Hello, and welcome to this episode of Ruckcast. Ruckcast is your opportunity to listen in on unscripted conversations about cutting-edge Ruckus Wi-Fi and wired networking technology, Ruckus business, and just interesting innovations that impact the computer networking industry today and in the future. Ruckcast is brought to you directly from CommScope Ruckus Education. For more learning opportunities, be sure to log on to training.ruckuswireless.com and view content on our Ruckus Education YouTube channel. Simply search for Ruckus Education on your YouTube homepage. Without further ado, here's your host, Matt Clauda.
David Carlson, you're here, finally, after all this time of us talking about it and computer issues and everything else. Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks.
So if you don't mind, just give everybody a quick introduction of yourself and just tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, my name is David Carlson. I'm the services and support lead for the North America, Canada region. I've also got a secondary role of leading what's called our Bulldog team for the Americas. And we can get into that at some point down the road.
Okay. So we were kind of chatting before we started, and you know, you brought up a really good point. I've had Lisa Ludgate and Melissa in to talk about the renewals program, and I've had Alan Grohe in to talk about the support portal and the forums and all the different tools that we have. But we're yet to have somebody on that can talk about our actual support offerings, what they are, how we differentiate them, what really comes encompassed in that. So that's really what I'm looking forward to talking to you about. So if you were to kind of just give us, you know, give us the quick, not even quick, because this isn't, we're not time constrained, but tell us about that. What are the differences in the support offerings and what's really encompassed with that?
Sure. So we really have two separate support offerings. The names of those are Watchdog and Bulldog. Watchdog is equivalent to just calling into TAC and getting technical assistance on maybe configuration, migration, even upgrades, right? It's reactionary. So you call in with a problem, the TAC engineer on the Watchdog team will work that problem to resolution, and then your case is closed. So it's truly transactional based, right? With Bulldog, it's equivalent to, if anyone's familiar with some of our competitors, it's equivalent to the advanced services that Cisco and Juniper have. We happen to call it Bulldog based off the Ruckus branding. But it is a proactive service. So we will also do reactive, right? So that team also does reactive support, but the nature of it is proactive. It's relationship-based, so it's a dedicated team of technical support engineers and a customer success manager, and I'll go into what that means. But being dedicated to Bulldog customers, because they are paying a premium for that service, they have regular cadence calls, quarterly business reviews, but the engineers know the customer. When the customer calls in, they in most cases recognize the engineer because they've been on their operations calls, but it's proactive in nature. So the idea is we work with the customer to get them, you know, the right code in the network, maybe a bug scrub proactively, maybe design reviews, help with the migrations or projects that they have. And the idea is that they won't have an outage or an issue that causes us to have to do reactionary support posture. Now, we do obviously support our customers in a reactive nature, but we reduce our time to resolution because when that customer calls in, that the dedicated support team for Bulldog already knows their environment. So you eliminate a lot of knowledge transfer of the network. And then we also have the CSM who's engaged, and that's a customer support manager that is operationally focused on the customer. They are the point of contact for the customer from a business perspective into the Ruckus support team. So that helps to speed resolution as well in situations where, the CSM needs to reach out and get maybe our engineering team engaged as our Bulldog TSEs are working on an issue. One other thing that speeds resolution with Bulldog, the proactive nature, of course, but because the Bulldog team are already L3 level engineers, they can escalate directly into our engineering team. the folks who write the code. Whereas with attack, the watchdog model, you know, we go into a L2 level engineer, they escalate into an L3, and then that engineer can escalate into engineering. So there's a two-step progression where is the Bulldog team can go directly into engineering. But as I mentioned, it's a relationship. We understand the customer, the environment, and we're able to help them, you know, a little bit faster than if you just call in cold.
Yeah, and I've had in previous life in a multi-vendor network, I've had exposure to this level of support. And it's really eye-opening. And granted, this was 20 years ago, so I was pretty young and pretty wet behind the ears. But you know, at first you're kind of amazed at how well things progress and they become resolved. Not to say that under Watchdog it doesn't. It's just kind of a different level, because when you have networks of that size, your support volume that you're actually sending out to your vendors is a little bit different, right? Because you have a lot of seasoned engineers on staff and they're running into issues that they can self-resolve without having to pick up the phone and call support.
But that's right.
You also have a deeper level of issue then, and that's why that really becomes important. So for people that are sitting there looking at it saying, our network's growing organically, you know, by leaps and bounds, and we kind of need that extra touch. There's so much value in that that I just, until you actually see it, and I can't really portray it in the way that it probably deserves, but it's such a different level of support just because the level of issue becomes so much different, right?
Right.
So, and we can certainly get into, so when we talk about, let's start at the beginning, right? We look at Watchdog support.
Mm-hmm.
When a customer is looking at this, you know, what are the key takeaways that they're going to take away from it? You know, and I guess to you and I, it probably sounds like a little bit of a silly question, but when you start to dig into it a little bit, you know, what does that look like? What is that customer experience to them, and what are they really going to gain out of that?
Sure. Well, so if you look at support in general, whether it's Watchdog or Bulldog, support in and of itself is really an investment that the customer makes in their environment, in the product that they've purchased, right? So we use some analogies to kind of get that across, and that's insurance for your car, for instance, right? You hope you never have to use it, but when you do, it's there, right? So whether you're talking Watchdog or Bulldog, that support is constantly there, ready to, you know, pick up the phone and answer questions, help you with an outage, whatever it might be. When a customer calls in on Watchdog, and these are more, you know, the Bulldog level of support is more for a larger environment, more complex environment, and Watchdog is great for the majority of our customers, right? it's a tiered model where they come into a you know, specific level of engineer that works on, say, it's, you know, let's just split it evenly, right? For simplicity terms, wired and wireless products. Okay. Now the case comes in, let's say it's an ICX switch issue and the customer is doing MAC authentication and they need assistance with configuration. That case gets opened by our welcome center. They check entitlement to make sure that you know, the product has support on it. And then they move that case into an L2 TAC. And in most situations, our level 2 TAC engineer can resolve the issue with no problem. If there's something that comes up that's a bit more complex, or maybe there's a, you know, perhaps a software issue, right? Something, some bug, they would escalate into our tier 3. That person is going to take the case fully to resolution. Now, whether that means that they offer a workaround, you know, give them a configuration, or they end up escalating a ticket, a bug, what we call an ER, engineering, into engineering. And then engineering would maybe come up with a code fix, right? Track that bug and come up with a patch, or roll it into the next major release. That would be the progression of a case from calling in or opening on the support portal. We can do it via chat or open a case off the portal. But we always ask customers on critical issues or high impacting issues that they call in, right? So P1, you must call into the welcome center. The reason for that is we want to get an engineer on the phone as quickly as possible to reduce the downtime. But that's really a progression of a case. Did that answer your question?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
So then when you take that level of support, and now we're going to move it into, okay, we're looking at full-blown Bulldog, and you have all of these different add-on pieces that come into it.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm a customer and I'm sitting there, and we've already kind of touched on how their I guess issues that are going to get sent to a support organization are going to be at a much different level anyways, right? But you take all of those things out of it, right? We're no longer in break fix. We're no longer in defect mode. We're no longer in P1 mode. I sit down at a QBR with one of the CSMs, and he looks at it. What can I expect to come out of that interaction with him after he or she has sat down and looked at this network and, you know, really dug into it to figure out where gaps or challenges are? What can I really see come out of that?
Sure. Well, so maybe I want to back up and kind of build out the deliverables and just talk about how they all, you know, link together. And then I think that will lead into the question you asked about a QBR, what we actually call a support business review.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you have the dedicated team, you know, it's a group of folks, and we try to make it sticky in the fact that we have our TSEs assigned, you know, with the CSM onto an account. Okay. Now that's not dedicated. We do have a level of support where you can have a dedicated engineer that only takes your customer cases, right? They only take one customer's tickets as they're open. But if we're not talking dedicated, we do have a pool of engineers, and we, like I said, we make it sticky where they're attached with the CSM to the account. And there's a level of deliverables, or a group of deliverables, that team performs together. Again, that CSM is the operational focus person. So they will schedule what we call a core report or a customer operations review. And that can be at the cadence of the customer. It could be, most customers do biweekly. We find that works well. We do have a few that have weekly, and then some of them go out to monthly. It just depends on the level of, activity in an account. Some are more active than others, and at times they, you know, if they're doing a migration, for instance, or a code upgrade, that's, you know, in a very large network, that could stretch on for months. So that maybe we increase the cadence of that core call. What that is a conference call on a regular cadence where our CSM will walk through any open cases, you know, live time with the TSE that's on that account, and they'll have a conversation with the operations arm of whatever the customer is. Okay. What comes out of that are a lot of knowledge transfer back and forth about the environment and the projects that they have coming up. And then we'll do even schedule activities where if a customer is, you know, planning to do a migration, we have a couple different things in our deliverable bucket, such as a health check of the network where we'll, you know, now the customer must have RDD, which is it's the Ruckus Diagnostic Dashboard. I believe you're probably going to do a podcast on that if you haven't already. But it is a VM that's spun up in the customer's environment that can gather information from Ruckus devices. So to do a health check, we recommend that the customer has RDD because, you know, just to get the information back in. But there's a script that we would run to collect the customer information, and then we would do a review of the key performance indicators, for instance, on a switch, right? Or if it's on a controller, we would, you know, there's certain things that we would be checking. So we review those with the customer if they're doing a migration. Then we could move into a maintenance activity procedure, which we call a MAP. And that's something where we work directly with a customer, maybe a spin out from that core call I was talking about, that regular cadence call. Maybe we have a special call just to talk about an activity they're planning. The CSM then would schedule a TSE to be available to assist or to have a case open that the customer can just call in, and the case is already there waiting. It's what we call a proactive case. And we would work through, you know, the customer's method of procedure that they plan to perform. If it's maybe a code upgrade, we would do a bug scrub, those type of things. And the scenarios vary, right? There's many scenarios. The idea, though, is there's a partnership with the customer, and that's the key. And we're having these regular cadence calls where that information, that knowledge transfer is taking place. So if there is an issue during a migration, for instance, we've got all that detail. We've got the topology diagrams, expected configurations, maybe config backups of controllers, something to that effect. And that just, again, that helps to smooth the process if an issue were to take place. So that's the core, and that's the kind of the operational function. Now, if you take it into the question you asked me, which I'm finally getting to, the support business review, you know, that's more of a higher level where we take a step back and, you know, either twice a year, we'll do quarterly. You mentioned quarterly. Most customers we find, you know, they, you know, biannually is good enough for them. They don't necessarily need quarterly. What we're doing there, the idea is we're culminating all of the data for the last period of time, whether it be six months or three, and we're taking a look at it as a whole. And, you know, what are we looking for? We're spotting trends in perhaps software, for instance. We might notice that we had, you know, a lot of defects, a lot of cases open with defects. It might be time for us to do, you know, a proactive bug scrub and a migration. And of course, we'll work with the customer on that. Another trend that we might find is, you know, maybe they've got some new staff, right? I mean, maybe over the last year or so, they've had some turnover or they've just expanded their staff, the customer, I mean. And we see that a couple of them are calling in, asking a lot of configuration questions. Maybe that's an opportunity to bring in, you know, your team, the education services team, to, you know, do some training for them. Or maybe we just turn them, you know, turn them over to the web-based training that we offer as well. You know, those are the type of trends that we want to spot. And, you know, there's some other trends like hardware, for instance. Maybe because we're taking that 30,000 foot level, we're backing up just a bit and taking a look at the operation as a whole over a period of time. We see that one product, you know, spiking in RMAs, for instance. You know, that's something that, you know, we could take back into our quality team and make sure that there's not some systemic issue going on with that product. And if it is, then we can work on a solution to remedy that, whether that's a, you know, engineering change order, you know, maybe that, who knows, right? It could end up being a software bug that, you know, is manifesting itself as a hardware failure. Those things happen.
Yeah. So if nobody has ever sat down and done a bug scrub or had somebody provide one of those, I cannot tout them enough. I've been the fortunate recipient of having those done before, and the amount of value that comes out of it. Because the reality of it is, you're a network engineer that's handling, you know, let's say your network is 5,000 devices roughly. You've got potentially 5,000 problems you're working on, plus the maintenance window that you have coming up in a week, and that's a repeated thing. And you get these little nuanced things that happen throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, and you just kind of patch it when it's acting up and then get it working again and move on. And a lot of times you don't have time to really dig into those issues and just sort it out once and for all. So if you get that kind of level of support and that outreach where the vendor's saying, let's take a look at it and see what's going on. Sometimes it just turns into, you know, you've got a guy, an engineer that sits down and looks at it and they spend a week doing it, but they find out the exact cause, the issue and the resolution for it. Now you already have all of these maintenance windows or planned activities coming up. You can start to build those into it to fully resolve those issues. So I've always been a huge proponent of that. Mm-hmm. One thing I'm really curious about is you look at product portfolios and how they change as a vendor when you're either acquired or the acquiree, right? So you take a wired product family, and now all of a sudden you pull in this wireless product family, which always poses challenges no matter what. I mean, if you're a networking guy, you've touched all of it at some point, but from a support level, you always necessarily haven't. And when you talk about Bulldog, you're now interfacing with customers that have a completely different architecture than what you were dealing with yesterday, right? So what kind of challenges did you run into in a support level just to kind of get everything to line up to deal with a broader product family at that point?
That's a good question. You know, it is a challenge because we do have a lot of products that we're expanding, right? We're not just doing, you know, just the APs with controllers and then switches, right? We've got a vast portfolio, bringing in CloudPath, right, for onboarding and authentication and SCI and Ruckus Analytics. How does the team support that? It is a challenge. What we're doing now is we've gone through over the last, it's been 10 months, 8 to 10 months. We've gone through some transitioning for our tech where we're trying to do a Ruckus unified tech. What does that mean? That means that we're, you know, instead of having just the Watchdog enterprise team, right, for wired and wireless, and then the Bulldog team, and then you've got your traditional escalation team, right? We've tried to unify that so that we've got all the common activities. So the duty management, for instance, a duty manager on shift, that's a shared common function. And what does that do? It instead of having four different groups doing their own duty management, duty manager, now we've got one group of duty managers that watch all these areas, whether it's wired or wireless Watchdog customers or Bulldog customers. And that makes us more efficient, right? So then we've got a better depth on our teams to handle more cases. But what do we do in those situations where maybe there's an SCI case? We're also doing product-facing teams. So we have champions in each area, like CloudPath, for instance, that where people focus on those technologies, right? And so that way, not everybody has to become an expert on every piece of our portfolio. We do these products facing teams, which are a smaller subset of cases. And then we've got, you know, a group of engineers that are focused on that. And that's across both, you know, our, what we call high touch and our Bulldog customers. So our enterprise, you know, level engineers, and then our Bulldog engineers. And that team helps us to scale across the product portfolio. So does that answer the question?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, because for as many times as you run into a challenge, you also now with a broader portfolio, you run into situations where you see opportunity too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge gain there in that benefit. With everything that's going on now, and I try not to focus on this just because I think everybody's kind of a little bit sick of talking about how the world's on fire right now, but have you seen support volume increase substantially or decrease in the past 3 or 4 months?
Great question. Yeah. So we have a Ohm is our, you know, he leads the enterprise TAC, and he keeps a record of everything that's happening. And you can see it really start. It's a U. The chart looks like a U. During the beginning of COVID, we saw that the cases started to decrease pretty drastically, right? And then they hit a plateau. I don't have the chart in front of me, but I want to say right around the end of April, beginning of May, and now we see it ramping back up to almost normal levels. Normal levels meaning historic levels, right? Year over year. So yeah, it took a dip and it's coming back up. And that's good. You know, that means that, you know, people are beginning to move forward. Some people have taken the opportunity to do, you know, some network refreshing, with the downtime or with people staying at home. It's been really a mix, but yeah, cases are returning to normal.
Yeah. You really find holes in things when, you know, you don't have a full staff in the office that can run out and start poking and prodding at things in the IDF or MDF or the data center, and all of a sudden you have time to sit down and start to review everything, and you start to realize, wow, we have a lot of work to do. You know?
Yeah.
So how did you get started in networking? Like what kind of put you on this path?
Oh, me personally?
Yeah.
So I was in the Arizona National Guard full-time in Phoenix. And believe it or not, I was the electronic digital computer mechanic. That was the title. Okay. Crazy, right? So I was the guy that basically fixed the computers. And at the time, you know, the National Guard was doing this, what we called RCAS, Reserve Component Automation System. Okay. It was nationwide. And it was a Unix-based system. The users, you know, didn't know it. They all knew Microsoft products, but they didn't understand this Unix, you know, this GUI overlay on Unix. So, so they started to abandon that project, and move towards Microsoft products. And that's what I was doing. So they basically, I remember my captain looked at me one day and he threw me a network interface card with a floppy disk that had the driver on it. And he said, you know, we've got connectivity down to your shop. I had this shop down away from headquarters. And he said, let me know when you get it connected to the network. So I called him. I'm like, hey, I'm I think I'm connected. I'm you know, I'm good. He's like, congratulations, you're a network engineer. So and so and that, you know, that's, and this was, you know, 1993, something like that, 92. Yeah, so then from there it was just, you know, drinking from the fire hose, learning everything I could. You know, Cisco routers, frame relay. We connected the state. A lot of that infrastructure was in place because of that RCAS system I mentioned, but we were expanding it. And then there was setting, you know, building the NT servers and Microsoft Exchange. I remember one time I took a book home for Exchange server and basically read as much as I could that night, fell asleep in the chair, woke up, showered, went back to the office and set it up. And my colonel came in and I had an email in his inbox. And I said, well, you know, here you go, arizona.army.mil. And there it was, he had email. So, and of course, what that meant was I was going to, you know, a lot of training classes. A lot of it was on my own, right? And me and there, I had a specialist that worked for me. I was a second lieutenant at the time. And, you know, so he and I were all over the place. You know, they would put us on a helicopter and fly us down to Watts, which is the Western Aviation Training Center. And, you know, that's where the Cobra pilots are all trained for the military, for the Army. And, well, not all, but the main one. And we would go in and work on network problems, right? So it was a great time, a lot of information coming at me. I ended up finally moving into the civilian sector at some point. I worked for International Network Services and became a consultant, ended up at US West, and then someone recruited me into Cisco, one of the guys. So I was at Cisco in advanced services for 10 years, left there. I did two years as a dev tester in the government solutions group at Cisco, which was fun. We were doing radio aware routing, some good stuff. And then I moved into, I was, doing 3G, you know, supporting one big customer, mobile carrier at Cisco, and then moved into Juniper and was supporting the 4G network at that same large carrier. And then I ended up moving to Brocade, and of course, you know, we were acquired and moved in, and now we're at Ruckus CommScope. CommScope Ruckus.
So first of all, thank you for your service. Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing that I've always, first, the other thing I was going to tell you is the second you mentioned frame relay, I shivered, because I think anybody that's ever dealt with frame relay has probably had more headaches than they want to admit. We had frame relay circuits all over with an ISP I worked for way, way, way back in the late 90s. And it was so bad, we knew them so well that we'd have one drop and we would just call Enterprise at US West and tell them, hey, can you just latch this circuit? And they'd latch it and they'd tear it back down and it'd come back up. Like, I had to get out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning for this. This is ridiculous.
Yep.
You know,
good stuff.
I think what we're going to end up doing at some point is I'm going to put together a podcast specifically just for war stories, because with all of the history, just the sheer amount of history that we have of people that have been doing this for so long, I think that would be a lot of fun, because there would be a lot of funny stories that would come. You're going to have to censor yourself a little bit, I'm sure, but it'd be a lot of fun to talk about that for sure. So,
a lot of late nights. You know, I remember having one of my buddies I had to relieve him. He had been on the phone for 24 hours, and then I took on the next 12 hours because there was a large outage going on, you know, across a major carrier. So, and that's all hands on deck, not just, you know, one vendor. All vendors are on those calls. So, yeah, interesting stuff.
I don't miss that. I mean, be there for 24 hours and then get relieved by somebody that's going to be there for 24 hours. And you're just like, oh my goodness. Yep. You know, I mean, if you really sit down and look, the reality of it is, in my opinion, is when you work in a support organization, right, the job can be a little thankless sometimes, because sure, I've never met anybody with a networking background, a network engineer, anything, that didn't have a lot of passion for it. And you see how much blood, sweat, and tears goes into it, and then you realize that you're stretching yourself really thin at times to kind of get through some of this stuff. I mean, I've had stretches where we were going for 40 hours just to try and get stuff up and running and working. And, you know, they're just resilient. You know, I mean, it's really kind of a refreshing thing to see just how much passion goes into that. that'll.
Well, I think, yeah, you hit it. You got to have the passion, otherwise you get burnt out quickly, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're sitting there reading a book, falling asleep on the recliner, and then getting up and running to work to try and figure everything else out. I mean, that's that really speaks to the broad majority of people in this industry, and I mean, the people that we work with are no different, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's the challenge of it too, right? It's like I want to get this up and working. I want to see it working. And there's a, you know, there's a sense of accomplishment when you do that. And, you know, same thing as when you've got a network that's down and you're able to bring that network back up. It's, there's an accomplishment. If, you know, it's, you solve the puzzle. That's the way I look at it. You solve that puzzle for the day, and you got it going. So that's the great thing. And, you know, it's nice to know as well when you're out there as a network engineer, that you've got a vendor that's there to pick up the phone and help, right? You're not alone.
Yep.
So that's the big thing for me is you're not trying to fix this on your own. You've got somebody there to help you out.
That's a really good point because you always have a lifeline. One of the things I've always said is I've been very, very fortunate over the span of my career to work with very talented, intelligent, just smart as a whip people, right? And you always have that lifeline, but then you turn around and the people that, you know, are your lifeline, you realize they have a lifeline too. So everybody along the line has a lifeline somewhere. And it's a huge relief really when you think about it, because you could fight with something for 10, 12 hours and then take a step back and, you know, run the problem by somebody. Hey, did you check this? No.
Fresh set of eyes. Yeah. Fresh eyes.
I know. Well, that's cool. That's a really cool backstory. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's good.
Yeah. So where do you see... We live in a different world every day, every month, every year. Where do you see support going? I mean, what do you think are going to be the big changes that happen to it over the next couple of years? Do you think it's anything massive is going to change, or do you think the model that's there, you know, for the most part is good and solid and works, and you don't need to make any, you know, broad changes to it?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think things will change as, you know, even now, network engineers are moving more. You know, I was a traditional route switch guy. And now network engineers are moving into DevOps and scripting and self-healing networks, right? And that's really where we're trying to get things to move. So you're not having to rely on a person to go in and, you know, configure something or you know, troubleshoot the network. You know, to a certain level, you hope that the network would be able to self-heal. You know, and we're doing some things on the tool that we've got, a support tool that I mentioned, RDD, Ruckus Diagnostic Dashboard. We're doing some things there to help bring in, you know, some intelligence into the tool to recognize when there are issues. Now, right now, the tool does spawn open cases, but, you know, the team who's building that tool has a, you know, they've got a very long runway of things that they've got planned for it. So it's it'll be interesting to see how things do progress and at what speed. I think that's the other thing that people have to, you know, keep in mind is there are things that come along in the industry and in the world that cause us to speed things up much quicker than maybe we thought they would be, you know, a year ago, for instance, right? Even this the pandemic or COVID-19 that we're in now, right? You know, nobody a year ago thought everyone would be working from home. We were able to quickly do it, right? So, you know, you get human beings are resilient, right? And so we adapt pretty quickly to whatever changes in our environment. So, yeah, I think the future though would be, you know, I would see self-healing, self-aware networks. That you know, what time frame are we talking? I couldn't tell you. I have no idea.
You know, my personal take on that, I think the limitation is you have hardware that comes out that expands the capabilities of what we can do at a much greater pace than the human element, where they can develop software to take advantage of that is slower. So mm-hmm. even though the hardware is at a much faster clip, the software is still slower, because if you look at any software application, you're talking about hundreds, thousands, millions lines of code, right? And it just, there's so much more, you know, concerted effort that goes into that. I think that's really where the gap is always going to be.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
So, yeah. But you never know.
A lagger. No, you don't.
What's that? I didn't hear you. Sorry.
No, you don't. I mean, if you ever meet somebody who says definitively this is the way it's going to be, walk away because they're probably lying to you.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Nobody really knows.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right. Cool. David, I can't thank you enough for coming in and doing this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll do this again soon. And like I said, when we do the war story roundtable, you're going to have to come in and share some because I'm sure you have some good ones.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Everybody out there's got them, so sharing them is always fun.
Absolutely. Awesome.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you, and we'll do this again soon.
All right, take care.
Awesome. All right, thanks. See you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Ruckcast. If you just found us for the first time, be sure to follow or subscribe on your platform of choice so you can be notified of future episodes. If you have ideas for future episodes or can't find Ruckcast on your favorite platform, contact us at ruckcast@comscope.com. And as always, thanks for listening.